Are you tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. This week, we'll be speaking with my friend and fellow activist, Kevin Zeese. Kevin has a website called Flush the TPP, and he says despite the votes recently and President Barack Obama giving himself fast-track authority to negotiate the TPP, that we can still stop it. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with Kevin Zeese. Kevin Zeese, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
So glad to talk to you again.
Well, it's been a while, so finally. What'd you do? Did you drop your coffee?
No, I was saying so glad to talk to you again in public.
Oh, yeah, huh? So, This interview is going to be about the TPP, fast track, whatever. It's kind of confusing what's going on. Maybe it's intentionally confusing, so people don't really investigate it that much. But I think a really good place to start would be the recent vote on fast track, the so-called fast track. So first of all, can you explain what this fast track is? And I was listening to a recent interview you did, and you called the votes on fast track choreographed corruption. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Perfect. I'm glad you caught that phrase, choreographed corruption.
That's perfect.
Fast track has been something that Obama's wanted for years. Last year in 2014, they tried to push it and didn't get very far. We had a massive response and had Harry Reid as the majority leader. He's been always opposed to fast track, just on principle. He doesn't like Congress giving its power to the president. Now we have Mitch McConnell. He has a different view, and so the Senate was really the first place they could fight. And what was surprising in the fight this time in the Senate was that we held them off for so long. Everyone thought the Senate was a foregone conclusion because senators from both parties need a lot of money to run for office, and you get a lot of money from big transnational corporations, and this is a transnational corporate trade agreement. And so they tend to give in pretty quickly to the big business interests because they need so much money to run for office statewide. The House was always our battleground. And, Nancy Pelosi played her cards very close to the vest. Both sides saw her doing things that they liked and saw her doing things that they didn't like. So she played both sides. In the end, she was obviously on Obama's side. And that's why I call it choreographed corruption. Because in the end, the House needed 218 votes. That's a majority. They got exactly 218 votes.
Right.
And that because they knew that the 219th and 220th vote were going to be politicians who were taking an unnecessary political risk because the population of the country was so opposed to this. There was a popular uprising in Congress, literally hundreds of thousands of phone calls in the last 3 weeks before the vote, probably more than a million phone calls came into Congress from the right and left. It was across the political spectrum. And so the politicians, the elected officials knew that if they voted for fast track, they were risking their political future. And so Nancy Pelosi just gave them the exact number of votes the Democrats they needed, 218. And I blame Nancy Pelosi for that. On the Senate side, by the way, they needed 60 votes to stop the filibuster, and they got exactly 60 votes. And so that's why it's choreographed. Exactly 60 votes in one House, exactly 218 votes in the other House, and they passed this with a bare minimum needed to move forward. But the battle's not over yet. We're still trying to stop all three of these trade agreements. The TPP people know about, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, they know more about that than the other ones. The Transatlantic is the European nations, and that's having its own struggles in Europe, which has a very similar corporate populist battle that we have in the United States, very powerful corporate interests in Europe. And then the third one, which is the most important one, I think, TISA, the Trade and Services Agreement, 50 nations are negotiating that. And that's going to affect every aspect of our lives, from the Postal Service being pushed toward privatization, Medicare being pushed toward, and Social Security being pushed toward privatization. It's going to be a devastating agreement. And so it's all three of these agreements together create a whole new web of law that manages trade in the favor of corporate interests. It's a really corporate trade law that Obama's incredibly putting in place. This is like the most devastating corporate attack that we can see. It might be, and you're right, Cindy, confusing and secret. That's their strategy. Their strategy is keep this secret for as long as possible. Don't let anyone see the text, because if people saw it, they would not like it, and it would be a revolt against it. And if it starts to get out, be confusing about it. You know, put out misinformation, talk about the leaks not being accurate, whatever, to keep the public uninformed and confused. Because if the public knows about this, this is the kind of thing that leads to a real revolt. That's what this really is, because it affects everything.
Well, that's what one of my recent guests said, that if the TPP passes, all the trade agreements pass, then there might be an uprising in the United States. But I just don't see that happening. Do you think that maybe the effects of it will be so devastating that people will finally, you know, feel like they're being personally affected, and they will start an uprising? Because I just don't see a law passing and people all of a sudden like go, oh, we're being oppressed here in the United States, let's go get them.
Well, you know, I'd prefer the uprising to happen now before these laws take effect. But it's tough.
Oh, I'm with you. Should have happened a long time ago.
I know you are. And, you know, Occupy was an uprising. It was about 0.1% of the population, about 300,000 to 400,000 people. I think we now, since uprising, the seeds planted there, you know, everything from Black Lives Matter to $15 hour wage to the wealth divide, health care, all these issues, you know, they all had roots in Occupy. Even Black Lives Matter. I was watching an Occupy movie a couple nights ago, which that Dennis Traynor produced, right, called American Autumn, uh-huh. And there was a scene in there of a Black Lives Matter protest. A list of people, African Americans killed by cops, and uh-huh. people doing a protest on it. So even that has roots in Occupy. But anyway, since Occupy, I think we probably have now gone from 300,000 to 400,000 people, maybe to 600,000 or 700,000 people, maybe even a million. I know that the coalition that supports our view on the trade agreements is the largest coalition ever. It represents tens of millions of people. But a lot of those are people who are union activists and green activists from Big Greens. And, you know, so will they uprise, or will they just, you know, sign a petition, you know? And we need uprising. We need people in the streets to stop this. I'm not one who likes the idea of things have to get worse before they get better. I think things are bad enough right now. And so people need, and so is there going to be an uprising? It depends on us. Can we organize it? You know, when we did Occupy, we organized for 8 months before it started. And that didn't happen out of thin air. That happened because people tried to make it happen. So our job is to try to make it happen now and to keep building. The challenge of waiting for these trade agreements to have the impact is it's a big gradual process. You know, the old frog in boiling water. It just seems nice and warm until it kills you. Well, that's pretty much what's going to happen with these trade agreements. It's going to be a slow process. We'll see jobs lost. We'll see wages go down. We'll see environmental degradation. We'll see the United States losing some cases in court that in these trade tribunals that force us to change our laws. You know, there'll be a gradual process. So will people feel it? Will people react? Again, it's up to us. Those of us who are informed are able to write about it and communicate about it, it's our job to enrage the population, to teach them what's happening. Let them see what the truth is, and they can get mobilized. But it doesn't happen unless people like us make it happen.
Well, and to me, it's like, first of all, Obama promised he'd be the most transparent administration in U.S. history, which is just a total joke. But Congress members who are voting, who are the ones who are voting, they can only go to the basement of the Capitol to read parts of the trade agreement. They can't take any notes. Nope. They can't take any photocopies of anything. But the corporations have not only read the agreement, they're able to edit the agreement. And so how can people look at that? And I'm really thinking more, not just your average, American, United States of American, who is just trying to survive in this society. I'm talking about Democrats and their, the toadies for the Democratic Party. How can they even justify what's going on? And so we had the Fast Track Authority pass. Obama signed it to give himself more power, to consolidate more power in one branch of the government, which the PDA, Progressive Democrats of America, they opposed that when Bush was president. We were always talking about this usurpation of authority in the executive branch. But, last week Obama gave a great speech that somebody wrote for him, and now we're just supposed to. Oh, and also the Supreme Court passed the right for same-sex couples to marry. So now we're supposed to forget about this major, treasonous act that happened in Washington, D.C.
And it's interesting, Obama signed the Fast Track the same day he did this raise for overtime, which of course will dissipate once these trade agreements take effect, because people will be losing jobs and wages will be going down. That's the impact of these things. So he didn't see any articles about Obama signs Fast Track. You saw lots of articles about Obama increases the overtime wage. So very artfully done by you can't underestimate these people. They are very strong at what they do.
Right.
Partisanship is a gigantic problem. Those partisan blinders. And it's true for both parties, but for us, it's especially true with people who are Democrat partisans. They just turn, those blinders get put on, and they don't want to see anything. They don't want to see that Hillary Clinton has been a free trader her whole career.
Right.
With NAFTA and WTO when she was worked with Bill Clinton in the White House, or whether it was TPP when he was Secretary of State. She has been on the wrong side of those issues consistently. But people don't want to hear that. And they want to stay blind to it. They want to stay ignorant of it because it's so important to have the right gender in the White House. And I do think that we need to break those glass ceilings, but we have to have some substance behind it, not just the fact that someone is a woman. I mean, it's just not good enough.
Right.
Just like having African Americans not good enough.
Right.
But, PDA, by the way, I should say, they've changed their name to People Demanding PDA, People Demanding Action. So there still is the old PDA. But it seems to have shrunk in size, and then the new PDA, People Demanding Action, is the larger of the two groups, and they did get involved in the opposing Fast Track.
Uh-huh.
And that was interesting about the Fast Track fight. Maybe it's because members of the House and Senate were, on the right side of it, to a large degree, on the Democratic side. Maybe that allowed the unions, the Campaign for America's Future types, the PDA types, the very, Democrat partisan groups, to join on board. The unions joined on board because they know that these trade agreements will end what's left of unionism. It's going to be very hard for workers to get a fair shake. Jobs will be disappearing. Unions will be getting weaker. So they know that their future is based on whether these trade agreements pass or fail. So it's going to be a big battle to win it, but I do think we can win it. And it takes, as I said, it's our responsibility to get people mobilized. And it doesn't take anything but a few percent. If we had 3% of the population mobilized, a population of 350 million, that's a ton. That's tens of millions of people mobilized.
Right.
So we could, you know, we could. That's a small percentage. You know, we had 0.1% during Occupy, and look how it scared them. Look at the effort they made coordinating police across the country with Homeland Security, the FBI, Federal Protective Service, all involved in trying to suppress the Occupy encampments. You know, they scare because they're scared of the Black Lives Matter movement now. They're scared of the Fight for 15 movement. And this, so if we can convince people that these trade agreements link all of these issues and make everything we're trying to do harder, and people really get active in a mobilized revolt kind of way, a rebellion, I think we could easily stop TPP. It can be stopped as bad as they want it. They were so afraid in the fast track debate that they wouldn't let one member of Congress more than necessary vote for it.
Right.
That shows their fear. We should build on that strength.
Well, it's I'm getting a little bit of a echo. Do you hear that echo when I talk?
A little bit.
Okay. It stopped. So, yeah, you know, we have the Democrat apologists like saying, oh, yeah, most Democrats voted against it. But the thing is that even though Nancy Pelosi, the leader of the Democrats in the House, did that choreographed corruption, as you call it, and it's just a big show, that they won't now say the Democratic Party is the party of big business, it's the party of war, it's the party of Wall Street, it's the party of torture, spying, not transparency, it's the party of secrecy. And so they're still going to support it no matter what. And I just picking on the PDA because we were just on a recent discussion with the PDA about the Democrats. But it's not them, and it's widespread. It's this widespread partisanship. So when are these people finally going to realize that, you know, we have to work together to defeat this duopoly? And because that's the problem. The Republicans and Obama worked intimately, are working intimately on this trade agreement.
That's right. Yeah, no, I think your analysis is spot on. I mean, of course, the reality of the Democrats is not new. You know, they started out as a slave-holding plantation party. They evolved into big railroads and big business when that was the business of the era. And they've continued to be a big business pro-war party their whole history, really. And so this is not new. And you know, but they are feeling threatened a little bit. Right now, almost a majority, like something like 46% of Americans are registered independent. That's the highest it's ever been. Only 32% are Democrats, 26% Republicans. And so people are seeing themselves more than ever as not part of either party, which is really interesting. And I think that's why we're seeing Senator Sanders run. He is the sheepdog for the Democrats. I know people love Sanders, and I like a lot of his stands on domestic issues, at least. On foreign policy, I'm not as thrilled. But he's getting big crowds now, and he's convincing Democrats that, look, there's room for them, room for progressives who oppose Wall Street. There's room for them in the Democratic Party. In the end, that won't be true.
Right.
Because the Democratic Party primaries are set up so that superdelegates are about 20 to 25% of all the delegates. Those are, you know, governors and party stalwarts who will make sure that the Wall Street Party candidate wins. And then, of course, in March, there's 24 primaries and caucuses across the country in one month. And that's very hard for a challenger who doesn't have the money to be on TV in 24 states. Doesn't allow them to really compete. So that's when Sanders is going to see his downfall. But Sanders' role is to keep people in the Democratic Party. They see people leaving the party. They see the independence numbers increasing. His job is to keep people in the party. And I think he calls for a revolt against the billionaires. You can't have a revolt against the billionaires inside of a billionaire party.
Exactly.
So it's a totally false promise.
Right.
But it's enough. It's enough of a promise that keeps people in, and that's the problem. And his diagnosis on issues is right. His diagnosis on political power is wrong. The diagnosis on political power is we have to build an alternative to the two parties. And even that alternative doesn't win elections. If it threatens the two parties by taking enough votes, the two parties will have to start listening. And that's how we've always, those of us, this has been a duopoly throughout our history. This is not new either. And throughout that history, except for one instance, all the transformative changes happened by presidential candidates who lost elections, whether it's unions forming, ending the creating the eight-hour workday, ending child labor. Even the New Deal all started in the Socialist Party and continued because there was a left challenging FDR when he was president. And so the New Deal even it has its roots in third party. The only time it didn't happen was slavery, where Abraham Lincoln became the most successful third-party president in history. And so otherwise, every instance of a transformative change, women voting, they all have come from outside the two parties. And that's the reality. And so even without winning, we influence the elections better by having a third alternative. And that's what Sanders should have done this campaign. Yeah, if he was really going to try to change a rebellion against the billionaires, he really should have been outside the two billionaire parties and creating space for a third party. Even if he didn't win, that space could have been built on in the future. And that's the big mistake. And that's why I can't support Sanders.
Right. I agree. Bruce A. Dixon from the Black Agenda Report called him the sheepdog, I think. Yep. He said he was sheep herding or sheepdogging. Yep. And it's a long history. Well, not a long history, but recent history, since I've been a voter, there's always been this leftish candidate. Dennis Kucinich was the one in 2008,
Multiple times, yeah.
Yeah, so, so Sanders, his foreign policy, well, lack thereof, but when he has spoken on these issues, turned me off of him. But as soon as he started running as a Democrat, that was it for me. You know, exactly. I agree with you. He could have... been transformative instead of, just Joe. And plus he has multiple occasions says he likes Hillary Clinton and will support her if she gets the nomination. You know, at least Dennis said he wouldn't support the nominee until he did.
Right. So. Yeah, Dennis always did support the nominee. Dennis was very open about hoping to pull people into the Democratic Party who were leftists. He was very open about that. Jesse Jackson, I said, was just another example. But Al Sharpton was another. There's always been these kind of candidates, who kept people in the Democratic Party when they should have been leaving it. And if we had, I think our big mistake was 2004, after Nader, impacted the outcome by showing political support in 2000, people ran away from him. They should have run toward him. They should have embraced him.
Right.
They should have said, "We're going to spoil every election until you guys start to wake up and not nominate people like John Kerry," who's the richest man in the Senate, big corporatist legislator, and also a very pro-war legislator, the most hawkish person. He's the most hawkish person in Obama's cabinet, worse than the Department of Defense. So when they nominated him, people should have revolted and stayed with Nader. Instead, they wimped out, and either anybody but Bush, was the slogan, or safe among independents. We're only going to run in safe states where there's no competition between Republicans and Democrats. We're not going to affect the outcome in swing states.
Well, that was the Green Party's strategy that year.
Exactly. That was the biggest mistake. And they finally have recovered. They finally, after a decade, have recovered from that.
Uh-huh.
But they're still a too small a party with not enough people have enough confidence in them. I think because of that 2004 decision, people don't have enough confidence in them to really stand up against the Democrats. Jill Stein's a lovely person. She's a good candidate.
Right.
She speaks well.
Agreed.
She's right on the issues. I like her a lot. I'll vote for her.
Right.
But I don't think the Green Party has the momentum to really build the kind of rebellion against the duopoly that we need.
Well, Kevin, where can my listeners and people get more information about joining and fomenting some kind of mass revolt against the passage of these terrible trade agreements.
Yeah, they call them free trade, which is such a lie.
Yeah.
I call them rigged trade. These are crony capitalism type agreements. Our major project that evolved from Occupy is Popular Resistance. It's popularresistance.org. It covers about 15 fronts of struggle that we're all involved in different ways, from wages to trade agreements to banking to healthcare. Black Lives Matter, that's all in there. And we report on that on a daily basis on Popular Resistance. I really recommend your listeners subscribe to the Daily Digest. It's about 15 articles a day, and there's a paragraph on each article. You can get more details by clicking on the article. But it's a great way to know where the movement is going on all fronts. And we also have up on Popular Resistance, you'll see the top slider. One of the top sliders is about the trade agreements and how to get involved in that. We give people specifics on that. What they can do, and we have a campaign focused on that, it came off of a sign, a protest sign early on in the TPP process three or four years ago, called Flush the TPP,
mm-hmm.
Flush Toilet Paper Plus.
Right.
We used that as a sign because people couldn't remember what the TPP was in those days.
Right.
This was way before it was ever discussed much, and so Flush the TPP became our campaign name. And so there's a link from Popular Resistance to flushthetpp.org if you want to get specifically involved in just that issue and not the whole range of issues that connect us. And I think it's very important, actually, in my view, to recognize that all these issues are connected. We have to create a across-the-issue solidarity. And that's one thing that the three massive trade agreements that Obama's pushing should do for all of us, because it affects every aspect of life and whatever struggle we're involved in, war and peace, corporate power, keeping the Postal Service public, expanding health care, keeping Medicare alive. All those struggles will be harder to do, probably almost impossible to do, without a lot more mobilization with those treaties passed. So it's a real solidarity opportunity. But popularresistance.org is a place to go. I think people will really enjoy the Daily Digest, so they can see that there is a lot of action going on. It's not, people are not doing nothing. There are a lot of people doing a lot of important work. They just don't get covered by the mainstream press.
Right.
And so our job is to fill that void and let people know there is a movement.
What do you think about the recent revelations by WikiLeaks about these trade agreements?
I love WikiLeaks for doing that.
Yeah.
And it's so important that that happens. The one they're focusing on mostly right now is the Trade and Services Agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And the most recent leak, which I think was yesterday or the day before, we have an article on Popular Resistance on it today, it talks about how TISA is going to push local governments to move away from buying local to buying transnational. In other words, we're not going to help the local economies. We're going to funnel whatever wealth there is in our local communities to transnational corporate power. And they are very open about it. It's not a secret. Now it's out. That's what they're trying to do. That should enrage every local government in the country. Should be angry about that. That you're going to take our power as democratically elected officials to buy green, to buy local, to buy American, to try to build our local economy. You're going to transfer our power to protect our people's wages and our natural resources and give it to in a secret agreement. You're going to give it to transnational corporations. That should enrage everybody. That alone, that one thing, should get people up in arms. So I think they're doing great work. What was really interesting was yesterday, Politico, a very corporate publication, had a leak of the TPP.
Really?
It was a leak about healthcare and how the TPP is going to result in the end of generic drugs.
Right.
It's going to make it almost impossible for generic drugs to compete or even exist. And so it's going to raise the prices already too high of pharmaceutical drugs. So another reason it affects everybody, everybody should be outraged at that. So just those two leaks in the last 2 days should get people in revolt if we can get the word out and let people know that's what we're facing in the future.
Well, another thing that should get people in the streets is the fact that, as you pointed out in that other interview, Monsanto is like one of the driving forces of this.
Yeah, all of our favorite corporate interests are right. are driving forces of this. There are about 600 corporate interests that have been advising the U.S. trade rep on the content of these three agreements throughout the secret process.
And I think Monsanto is one of the most evil corporations on the planet.
And they're planning evil stuff now. they're planning to change their name. They're planning to move out of the country. And, you know, moving out of the country, by the way, for Monsanto is part of these trade agreements because foreign investors, i.e. foreign corporations, have greater power than domestic corporations. So if Monsanto is out of the country and in investing in the United States and the state passes a law requiring GMO labeling or banning GMOs, they can then take that to a WTO trade tribunal and argue that that's a violation of the trade laws. That is a restraint on trade. And so make it very, it's a whole other layer of battle to get GMO labeling will occur if Monsanto moves out of the country, becomes a foreign investor, and has the trade tribunal approach. The trade tribunals are rigged. The judges are three judges, usually corporate lawyers, on leave from their corporate job. Then they make their ruling, and they go back to their corporate job. So you know how those results turn out. And they are not reviewable. No court, no federal court, the U.S. Supreme Court cannot overturn a trade tribunal decision. So that really challenges the whole concept of our independent judiciary under Article 3 of the Constitution. And I'm surprised that that's even constitutional, but that hasn't been challenged yet. I think it's unconstitutional. But it gives Monsanto more power than our Congress, our state governments, our local governments. They can trump them with these rigged trade tribunals. And that's, hey, there's a third reason for people to be in the streets, because every rock you turn over on this on these trade agreements, you find reasons for incredible outrage. I mean, the fact that they want to push the Postal Service to be private, the most popular government institution, the Postal Service. Medicare will be threatened by the Trade and Services Agreement. And, of course, rising pharmaceutical prices, which are a reality for both the TPP and TISA, will make Medicare more expensive and, you know, bankrupt it. So this is just outrage after outrage, and people need to understand this is the fight of the next 6 months. This is the fight. If you don't get out in the streets on this one, you're going to regret it down the road.
Well, thank you, Kevin Zeese, and we'll point people to flush the TPP and popular resistance and thank you for being on the show, and thank you for your continuing commitment to the struggle.
Thank you very much. I appreciate yours as well. Keep up the great work.
Well, we've been friends for a long time, and we've been in these various struggles together for a long time. So wouldn't it be nice if one of these days we could just, like, relax?
I like a victory.
Yeah. Well, again, Kevin, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
That's the Soapbox for this week. As always, I hope you were informed and inspired. And I do hope you go and join the resistance against the TPP. It really is a terrible thing that Barack Obama is working with the Republicans to try to pass on us, which we haven't even, or even the legislators haven't even had a chance to read it and know what's going on. The most transparent administration history, what a load of crap. Anyway, I hope you are enjoying the day, the weekend that the U.S. declared independence from Great Britain and has turned around to be the most evil empire just less than 300 years later. So anyway, as always, I'd like to thank Don DeBar, my engineer, I'd like to thank Kevin Zeese for his work and for always hanging in there and never giving up. I'd like to thank you for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now.